Okay, so I'm Andriy Davidov with Microsoft for more than 15 years, mostly with an exchange. In 2008, I started working with open specification project, mostly on exchange side of things and mostly in test. When I started, it was quite confusing. Language was, well, documentation language is strange. You see a lot of structure in documentation, but on the other hand, this documentation covers a lot of different subjects. You see a lot of boilerplates, but there is a lot of substance. You need to figure out how to separate. Also, you see when you download Exchange zip file, you get 130 something files. So you need to figure out what's important, what's not, where to start, what's interesting for you, what's not. And I think what I'm trying to do today is to give some advice in that space. In a sense, just tell myself back then what I know today about this overall project. So I'm going to provide the introduction to open specification. Present different views and general comparison of different protocol families. In agenda, I'll talk about open specification structure, classifications. I will focus more on transport-based protocol families because I feel it's important. Those are key documents in the set. I mentioned other notable group and talk a little bit more about content conversion. This is sort of key area in exchange.
Can you fix the microphone?
What's it? Hello? Is it better? Okay. So about that. So open specifications are available on MSDN for quite some time, a long time. They updated regularly and often. We always update them when we ship next beta, service pack, or RTM. We also update them just on regular schedule. For example, we will have update in a few weeks, end of the month, I assume. As it was already mentioned, they are authored by Exchange User Assistance team, which worked closely with product team to make things accurate. Initial documentation was written in close cooperation between the two teams. I want to mention that Exchange is somewhat different, that UA team actually writes documentation from everything in the documentation, working with product team. So tomorrow's sessions, one-on-one sessions, will be quite interesting. Documents are written for experienced developers. What I mean by that is that we don't go into details of computer science terms. We expect the reader to be familiar and experienced in the world of protocols, how cross-platform communication should generally work. And you will see a lot of legalism. You see a lot of legalism in those documents, but they, in fact, are written for developers. So they exchange set documents over the wire communication between Exchange server and clients, specifically Outlook. And we document on-premise service protocols. Any questions, Laura? Okay. So Windows, generally speaking, is not dependency. What I mean by that is that you don't need to be Windows expert to use this documentation. Sometimes we even say that those documents are written for senior developer who never ever seen Windows in his or her life. This is very different from SDK documentation. We cannot mention APIs, and in fact, we don't even mention Microsoft or Microsoft product, except in one very special appendix at the end. Document structure is very strict. I'm just giving you examples of sections 1.8, 2.0, and 3.0 in most are normative. In fact, 3.1.1 is informative. So it's just example of how strictly how strictly those documents are designed to be. And writer cannot skip session, section, cannot add section on top two levels. Some part of documentation of every document is normative, and some is informative. Normative part, you can think about it as code. In fact, that's what you need to actually understand the protocol and implement it. Informative sections, think about them as comments in the code. They make it much easier to understand. The way how this structure is enforced is through use of template, document template. Exchange used 6 of them for normative documentation. In normal protocol description, you deal with data structures, and you deal with some business rules, some sequence of events, some operations and logic that I will call behavior here. Most of the documents we have follow those three templates, and they document both structure and behavior. Section 2 is called messages, and this is where structures are, and section 3 protocol details basically talks about behavior. We also have a structure template, which talks only by structures. Those documents are used by other protocol documents. Similarly, we have algorithm documents and algorithm template, which in fact talks only about behaviors. We also have standards compliance. This one is interesting and looks completely different from anything else. It defines how the Microsoft products implement RFCs. You know, RFCs are normative documents, and they have optional behavior. They have things like recommended or truly optional. So those documents explain how we deal with that part, what is implemented and what's not. Again, I want to point out that they're very strict. It's a big deal to change template. It takes several months to make any adjustment to template in develop new session. I know that for sure because I was one of people behind creation of behind introduction of algorithm template, and we spent I think about 6 months to get it done and available. Normative language, just a few words on that. It's based on RFC 2119. It's a relatively short RFC. I would recommend to read it. It's interesting. It brings you to this world. A nice thing about normative language is that it's programmable, at least in this documentation. It is programmable. It's implementable. And we prove it. The way how we prove it is through development of test suites. That, in fact, was the first reason for test suite, for protocol test suite existence. We built them to prove that document is accurate and implementable. And in the process, obviously, we were finding bugs in documentation, fixing them, and that's our way to improve, constantly improve documentation quality. And to do this, we have offshore team that looks at open specifications. They look at publicly available information and build test suite. They read normative statements one by one and derive test cases out of them. From that, they build synthetic test client and run it against known implementation. Well, in this case, Exchange Server. If you run the same test suite against non-Microsoft implementation, we expect it to work. And if not, it will show differences between implementations. Today we make those templates, this time we started making those templates available for partners to use. One interesting thing about use of normative language in open specifications that we sort of extending this should and may use to indicate behavior in latest Microsoft release. Should, which in RFC means recommended, is implemented in latest released version, and may is not. As I mentioned, Microsoft products are mentioned in appendix. It's the last appendix, product behavior. Here's an example. You can see there is should, meaning that implemented in last version, and sure enough, endnote and appendix shows that 2003 and 2007 Exchange and Outlook don't do this, meaning that higher versions do. Any questions on that? When you read the document, it's important to always know which endpoint you are interested in. And endpoint is different from server SKU, from server product. Even protocols implemented on the server can play client role. If you think about like Windows protocols or some Exchange or SharePoint communication, some of them will act as client, so you always need to keep this in mind. And we document those endpoints. Normative sentences in the documentation are applicable to both. In most cases, you can clearly see which one. It just says this. Sometimes you need to just understand how it applies to both of them. Protocol always describes behavior of last version. What it means is that when we will release Exchange 15 documentation, it's even if protocol was implemented in previous versions, this document will be updated to talk about Exchange 15. So when you read it, it is always last version. Previous version behavior can be derived from end nodes. So you can get that. But it's important to know what is the target. Naming. Each open specification has a name, square brackets, and in Exchange, short name and long name. In Exchange, we happen to have naming convention for short names. So everything started with MXOXC and MXOXO belongs to Outlook Exchange, almost everything. MSAS indicates ActiveSync. OXW is Exchange Web Services. Actually, OXWS is most of them, the core. We also have standards and web dev. I'm going to mention web dev. I'm not going to talk about web dev. I will mention it just once. The good starting point is MSOX Proto. It's a system overview of Exchange protocols. It's informative, it's comments, it's easy to read. And it explains the relationship between protocols. At the same time, it is official classification of Exchange protocols, which you can see on the right. Additionally, I want to mention that it provides some informal overview of some scenarios. You can, for example, there is a scenario explaining how to send mail via RPC, how to provision a mobile client. It explains how protocols work together to do certain things. Picture of the right is taken directly from OX Proto. And of those families, today I'm going to talk about RPC family of protocols, ActiveSync, and web services. I will also talk about content conversion a little bit, mention an SPI family and directory services, which is auto discovery. Any questions on that? This picture, this diagram is interesting. I can spend quite some time on it. But there are two points I want to make here. Every protocol family is designed for a certain client in mind. For example, you can see that we don't expect smartphone to use RPC protocols. The reason being, RPC protocols are designed so that a lot of processing needs to happen on a client. So really, client is doing very heavy lifting here. So EAS provides more simplified view on objects that you will expect to see in the mail world, like message folder, task, calendar item, contact. EWS is also uses high level of abstraction, but it has much more features. It is much more flexible. New features in Exchange have a tendency to be implemented there. Outlook is using EWS for new features, for advanced features like mail tips, availability service, UEM. It all works through EWS. Outlook for Mac is using it, it's just built on EWS. And I was actually told that macOS now is using EWS natively in the client. RPC is the oldest family of protocols. It is very low level. By that I mean that Outlook is actually working with properties, property bags, and tables to get mail items, folders, attachments, everything else. Advantage of RPC family is that it provides direct access to what is stored in Exchange Server storage. If you look at protocol and what's inside, it's more or less one-to-one correlation. So with this family of protocol, you get into the real stuff in the store. So there is a reason why Outlook started using it, but EWS is moving to provide very good support for email clients. We also have Pop IMAP and SMTP clients, and Exchange can handle them. What's interesting is that it doesn't matter what protocol you use to access the information, you will get it from the storage, from Exchange storage. And in a sense, every protocol, every client will get kind of information that is most appropriate, in the most appropriate form for it. It also brings interesting subject of conversion. That's my second point on this slide. Like, when message comes from SMTP with MIME, we don't store MIME, we convert it. We convert it to store objects. So when it so happens that Pop IMAP client requests this information, we will rebuild MIME. We do some things to preserve fidelity, but generally speaking, everything is stored here in a form that is well suited for Exchange protocols. Yeah.
So Windows 8 Metro style interface that use EAS, right?
Windows. The question is, will Windows 8 Metro style use EWS?
Yeah, I say Metro.
The answer is I don't know.
Because when I install that. 8250, and it shows a mail client. I could configure like the way I do in cell phone. I believe it uses
Actually, can you repeat the question?
So Windows 8 Metro style interface, I saw a mail client there.
Yes.
And when I configure it, I believe it uses ActiveSync.
That is correct.
So it's coming under smartphone tablet.
Yeah, so you got to think about the scenario of, which actually we talked a little bit earlier about that, was
yeah.
the Windows 8, depending on which processor you have, one does not contain an RPC stack. And because of that, you need a Windows, you need a mail client. And effectively, the Windows team made that decision to actually...
I misunderstood the question.
Okay.
I understood that you were asking what is going to be used in by Windows Metro applications when they start... will they use EWS? And for that, I think it's too early to say. Windows Mail Client, which is pre-released, is using EWS, yes. And there are several reasons, because it actually talks not just to Exchange. It also talks to Hotmail, to Wife, and it talks to Google. And all of them have server implementation of EES protocol. So this, it is compatibility. But again, EES is it's most simplistic of all protocols. So it has common ground that works very well across different platforms. But will Outlook use EES? I seriously don't. It has much more features than just simply not there. Other questions? Other questions? Let me see. I think I talked about most on this slide. So RPC ROPS is workhorse for communication between Outlook and Exchange. It's basically it's MAPI. We just don't say that because we cannot say API. It uses ROPS, which are packed within RPC binary block. That is transport layer for all this family of communication. Every RPC can have multiple remote operations. And the way how this is designed is that you can pack several remote operations so that they pass some information through from each other when they're executed by server. And then you get server response to all of them. And for example, you can do logon, open folder hierarchy, navigate to inbox, open message, all in one call. It's very efficient. This is why I keep saying that it is very, it's built for efficiency over the wire. So RPC can, on its turn, can use HTTPS or TCP connections. This family was implemented from day one in Exchange for All, extended multiple times, re-architectured multiple times. If you look on naming for operations, you will see that they're all extensions. You will not find non-extensions. They're just not being used now. They're not even documented. The original. But the general idea is the same. Documentation in this family describes both Outlook and Exchange. So some documents talk about Outlook only, some about Exchange only. But most of them talk about both. I already talked about naming, and Michael mentioned that you have opportunity to have one-on-one tomorrow with the team. Any questions on RPC? Is it better? No? Okay. Web services. They use HTTP SOAP as transport. implemented in 2007. I think I talked about most of this on this slide. New features tend to be implemented here. It is quite advanced protocol, and it's very good way to talk to Exchange if you are building client. EWS talk will follow my presentation and several talks and one-on-one session tomorrow. Yes. Transport is HTTP over WBXML, binary XML. It's designed, it's really designed for use by smartphone, but its use now is extended. This one is cross-platform, and you can, using this protocol, you can communicate with different, with implementation on different platforms. It is industry standard. It's very widely licensed. Similar to RPC, it was extended and re-architectured several times. Has multiple versions. But it has quite good versioning system, and it has version negotiation, which is clearly defined, as opposite to RPC, which also has versions, but it's sort of hidden. So another thing I want to mention is that RPC, generally speaking, is not available everywhere, not on all platforms. For EWS, it's not the case. EWS client is basically everywhere. And EES is the same, but we know that there are several implementations on other platforms. On this slide, I think I talked about most of it. So it sort of captures what I already mentioned. Speaking of complexity, what I really mean here is level of abstraction. RPC has the lowest level of abstraction and the best access to storage. EWS is has higher level of abstraction. It also has good access to storage, but it is abstracted. So you talk with objects. I'll have example on next slide. And even number of amount of documentation for everyone sort of show complexity. In fact, RPC has more. It's just there's some conversion, large conversion documents that should belong here, but it's difficult. To see. Questions on this one? WebDev is deprecated. Don't use it. To reiterate comparison between EWS and RPC, I already talked about most of it here, so here's an example that I want to show, that in EWS attachment object is object, it's a predefined set of properties and operations in attachment collection. In RPC, attachment is property block with not so well designed set of properties, and you need to traverse through a table to get it. Other protocols we have is MSPI family of protocols. If you want to deal with do anything with address book, it's here. It's there are two kinds there. There is a protocol that describes an SPI endpoint, which is RPC endpoint, implemented in Windows Active Directory and implemented in Exchange 2010. So when Outlook talks to 2010 server, it actually establishes directory connection to the Exchange server. If it's not, if it's previous version, it establishes connection to directory. Protocols that describe our Exchange implementation is MS OX and SPI. And Windows has MS and SPI, which describes Windows implementation. It's more or less the same protocol, but we choose to document them differently because they are done in different server products. The way how Outlook figures out where to connect is through auto discovery set of protocols. They are RPC level protocols. I mean, they belong to RPC family, really. They apply to Outlook. Outlook web services has have its own auto discovery protocol. I'll talk about content conversion on last slide, which is going to, on next slide, which is going to be my last slide in presentation. We have file formats. We have two of them: MSG file format and offline address book format, and a couple compression algorithms that are being used by offline address book. I also mentioned that we have standards-based protocols, extensions, and compliance. MSOX Proto should provide good reference to them. Content conversion is core feature of Exchange Server. It's, a lot of things are built around the fact that it exists. So MSOX XML describes conversion between MIME world, internet world, and Exchange Server objects. It's a quite large algorithm protocol, it is being used from very different places on the server. I think when we tested it, we counted around eight ways to get to it. And that's the reason why I mentioned it. It's actually quite important protocol. TNF is documenting how we send rich exchange properties over SMTP, over packed in the MIME message. If you want to do something with secure MIME, or MSOX MIME explains how Exchange and Outlook are dealing with that. BestBuddy algorithm is not technically conversion, but I want to mention it. It's sort of. It describes how Outlook gets BestBuddy out of the message. The thing is that Outlook really doesn't know what to ask for, and it can handle plain text, HTML, and RTF. So the way it works is basically it asks for everything, and server gives errors in properties that it doesn't want to give, so forcing to get the best one. But it's a little bit more complex. That's what this protocol describes. We also have iCalendar to appointment, WeCard to contact, and two RTF related algorithms, protocols, compression and extensions. And here are resources. One thing I want to mention on this slide is support alias, doc.help@microsoft.com. And questions? Okay. What do we do? Break? Okay. We have a break.